Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last week, a Cincinnati area women's clinic ended or abandoned its court fight and has stopped providing surgical abortions. The Sharonville Clinic is the latest of those affected by the 2013 Ohio law banning transfer agreements with public hospitals. This leaves one abortion provider in that area and a total of 9 or 10 providers in the state, one of which does not have a home at this time. Chrissy Thompson of the Cincinnati Inquirer has been covering the story. She joins us now. Welcome to the show, Chrissy.
Thank you.
So let's first talk about, you know, why I had to use the phrase surgical abortion and transfer agreements with public hospitals. That tends to be the important phrases,
right? So what we colloquially call an abortion clinic is legally classified as basically an outpatient surgery center, and the state licenses all outpatient surgery centers, whether it's a LASIK center or an abortion clinic or a knee surgery clinic or anything in between. So These clinics have to go through all of the same licensing processes as all of the other outpatient surgery centers. But last year, the Republican-led legislature passed some new restrictions that make it difficult for abortion clinics to get those licenses. And the main one, which our state was the first in the nation to have this specific restriction put in place, is that a public hospital can't have a transfer agreement, a patient transfer agreement, with an abortion clinic. And what that means is it's a written agreement that says if we have a problem with one of our patients at our clinic, we can transfer our patients to your hospital.
What constitutes a public hospital?
Public hospitals are basically any that aren't run by a nonprofit religious organization. So, so we have hospitals that are run by universities, public universities. We have hospitals that are run by counties or you know, other localities, and then there are hospitals that are run by Jewish organizations or Catholic organizations, and those are considered private. So those are the ones that are still up for grabs as far as having this patient transfer agreement. But the Republican legislatures say that they don't want state money, taxpayer money, to be used for abortions, and so they don't want public hospitals to have these transfer agreements.
The transfer agreement, though, that's not about providing an abortion, is it?
No, again, it's about accepting a patient.
If something goes wrong.
If something goes wrong. And everyone on both sides of the issue says that you could still send a patient to
The nearest hospital.
Correct. And they would accept that patient because that's what they do. And that's the law. They have to accept patients who are in an emergency. Mm-hmm. So this is just a formality, but it is required by law. And again, it's prohibited for a public hospital to enter into this agreement. So in order to get a license, these abortion clinics have to find someone who's willing to sign on for a patient transfer agreement. And it leaves them with private hospitals only. Now, like I said earlier, many times private nonprofit hospitals are run by religious organizations, and
so that excludes, say, the Catholic hospitals.
They wouldn't want
Mount
to form,
Carmel, for instance.
Correct. They wouldn't want to form a transfer agreement with an abortion clinic because they don't support abortion. And in Cincinnati, where the clinics that we'll be talking about for the most part today are located, there are no options for private hospitals that are willing to enter into these transfer agreements with an abortion clinic.
All the private hospitals won't do it.
That's correct. Not all of them are saying so for religious reasons. A few of them have had agreements with abortion clinics in the past, mm-hmm. on various levels, but there is an awful lot of pressure coming in from the community, and for whatever reason, most of them have decided this is just not water, or all of them have decided that this is not water that they want to walk into.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. A 2013 Ohio law bans transfer agreements between public hospitals and abortion clinics and abortion providers. That means if without that transfer agreement, they can no longer be licensed as outpatient surgical operations. It's limited. It's now the state of Ohio has a total of 9 active clinics,
right,
plus one in name only. They don't have a location,
right,
yet,
have,
but they do have a transfer agreement, apparently.
Yeah, we have it is Cleveland Surgical Center, and they are looking for a new location. And so while they are currently licensed and have a transfer agreement, they don't have any place to perform abortions. So,
my guest is Chrissy Thompson. She covers state government politics for the Cincinnati Inquirer. She has worked on a series of stories about this for the Cincinnati Inquirer. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Once again, I just want to be real clear. When a patient is transferred from a clinic, ostensibly from a clinic to a hospital, it's not to complete an abortion necessarily. It's because something's gone wrong.
That's right. A complication, something that the clinic doesn't feel that it's doctors that it has there. They need backup, basically. And often it's not. I've heard of a couple of transfers. They're not often for super life-threatening things, but this is just, they're taking care of their patients and wanting them to be in a facility that has more resources.
Does it happen that often?
No, not very often. I know of, there's records that the state has, right, and they investigate things like this. So I know of a couple that have happened, and in the cases that I'm thinking of, the woman went home later that day. So
it does it happen maybe once a year, once every? Are there any statistics on that?
I'm sure there are. I'm not remembering off the top of my head. Once or twice a year would be average, given the ones that I'm remembering and what time period that they took place in. But I can't say that with any authority.
I can see public hospitals. In other words, they receive some kind of public funding to operate or operate under the auspices of a public entity. But private hospitals, what kind? You said pressure. They don't want to get involved in it. What kind of pressure can be brought to bear on private institutions?
Yeah. Well, I've talked about this with Greater Cincinnati Right to Life, and they say, of course, they've put pressure on private hospitals, publicizing the ones that are willing to take these patients, or because they feel like that's enabling the clinics to operate. So so it is something that they openly put pressure on hospitals, not to be willing to form these patient transfer agreements. And I want to close the loop here, if I may, just because this is something that often comes up. So the law requires these patient transfer agreements. However, it does provide an exception, what we call a variance, because varies from the standard rule, and it allows the health department, the director of the Department of Health, to grant an exception to clinics, whether it's an abortion clinic or another clinic. There are variances.
Any outpatient surgical clinic
that can't or don't meet certain regulations or laws to say, okay, based on a variety of other factors, we think you're still operating safely, you can stay in business. And for quite some time, these clinics, a couple of them, were unable to have transfer agreements and did operate under variances. But it appears right now we have 2 instances where the health department has declined to grant variances, and it appears as though that they're kind of moving that way more now, which is what's causing these clinics to close.
If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There are 10 clinics left in Ohio, 9 with a home, 1 still looking. Where are they? Are they dispersed around the state in equal doses, or how does that work?
Well, I'm looking at I have a list that I constantly update here. The clinics in Columbus, there are 3. All of them have transfer agreements and are not in any danger. There are in Southwest Ohio, we now have 2 clinics. We had one that stopped doing abortions last week because of it abandoned its court.
The Sharonville operation.
That's right. So now we have a clinic in Dayton and a clinic down in the city of Cincinnati in Mount Auburn, the Planned Parenthood Clinic. Now, neither of those clinics have a patient transfer agreement, and they have applied for that exception that I was talking about. And they're waiting to hear.
So this is nine, two of which are waiting to hear.
That's right. And there's a third, which is in a court battle over the same issue in Toledo. So it's conceivable that within a few months, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen, but given the precedent that is beginning to be set by the Department of Health, it's conceivable that we could lose three more.
What was the basis for Sharonville's court fight against this? The one that they abandoned?
Right. The Department of Health declined to grant them a variance.
Right.
And they, we have legal recourse in this country, right? So they took that to the courts and said, we should be granted a variance. We shouldn't, you should overrule this. We should be allowed to stay open, et cetera. And ultimately, it went through a couple of levels. And ultimately, a Hamilton County judge said last week that he ruled the week before last, that he lacked basically the authority because the law says the Department of Health has sole discretion to grant these variances. And so he said he lacked the authority to overrule that. And of course, they could have appealed. Mm-hmm. I think part of it was a money issue. And at this point in time, they just felt like these people operate the clinic in Dayton, and they felt like they wanted to focus on that.
And you said that there is a court, there's litigation in Toledo.
That's right.
Another clinic. Is it the same basic, we should be able to get this, or is there something more fundamental at stake here?
They don't have a transfer agreement,
they want
They want an exception of variance. That's right. The health department has denied it, and the final denial comes with an order to close, and they are appealing that in court.
Are they getting at something more fundamental than that, though, about the right to do? I mean, is anyone going after the law in and of itself versus just appealing the decision not to give them a variance?
That's right. There was a court filing for the Sharonville Clinic that started to get at that, but they ultimately decided to abandon that as well when they lost their most recent appeal.
So does that mean the Sharonville Clinic closes down?
Well, it can't perform abortions.
But did they do other things?
Well, what they're going to do, they'll provide birth control. And what they're going to do is Ohio law requires a counseling appointment along with, some pre-op sort of things, all sorts of different things that have to happen. Informed consent, things like that, with a doctor before you have an abortion 24 hours beforehand. Mm-hmm. So they will do those in Cincinnati and then send the patients the next day for the abortion to Dayton, assuming that they can get to Dayton. So the clinic, for now, I don't know how long that they can sustain this, but for now that building is open and is seeing patients, but not performing any steps of the abortion process. There's some question as to whether they would start providing medication for abortions. It's a different non-surgical.
It's not a surgical, right.
Right. But a lot of, and I've heard this multiple places, a lot of abortion advocates don't feel like Ohio's law provides the safest guidelines for the kind of medication, and they feel like it's outdated what we require here in Ohio for that abortion. And so for now, at least, the Sharonville clinics that they're not willing to do it because they don't feel like it's a safe process. And I have heard that other places.
Kind of ironic.
Yeah. So
my guest is Chrissy Thompson. She's a state capitol reporter for the Cincinnati Enquirer. We're talking about the 2013 Ohio law that bans transfer agreements between public hospitals and clinics that also provide abortions. This is required by state law. We're going to continue our conversation. Coming up, we're going to hear from NARAL Abortion Rights Ohio, and then also Ohio Right to Life later on in the program. So if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Last week, a Hamilton County judge ruled that an area clinic must cease providing abortions. The judge decided that he didn't have the authority to overrule a decision by the Ohio Health Department to ban or to eliminate a variance for an abortion clinic provider. That leaves one provider in the Cincinnati area. Still with us is State Capitol reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Chrissy Thompson. Coming up, we'll hear from Ohio Right to Life. Joining us now by phone from the Cleveland area is the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio, Kelly Copeland. Hi, Kelly.
Hello. Thanks for having me on your show.
The Kasich administration maintains that mandatory transfer agreements keep patients safe. You've said it's not about keeping women safe. Obviously, you want to have an agreement with a hospital where you can bring your patients, right, if something goes wrong?
Well, I think as you, as your guest pointed out earlier, that transfer agreements have nothing to do with that. If there is an emergency, an ambulance is called and the patient is taken to the nearest hospital that can treat that patient, and that hospital will, of course, treat them because that's federal law.
Mm-hmm.
What we're really talking about is an ability to abuse the regulatory system to close down clinics, not because they're unsafe. Keep in mind, the complication rate for abortion in Ohio is less than 0.5%. This is about the governor making decisions about women's health instead of women making their own decisions. They've tried for decades now to overturn Roe versus Wade, to outlaw abortion, and they've been unsuccessful. So what they're trying to do now, and we're seeing this in other states, Virginia, Texas, other states are doing similar campaigns against abortion providers. What we're seeing is that instead of outright outlawing abortion, they're going to effectively outlaw abortion by abusing their authority and closing clinics that are otherwise safe providers of medical care.
When I was talking with Chrissy Thompson a little while ago, we were talking about the Sharonville Clinic deciding mm-hmm. to abandon its court fight over this. What are they abandoning? Are they just going so far as to say the judge won't overrule the state? Is anybody taking it to the next step about whether or not it's constitutional what they're doing?
I think the legal battles around this are going to play out in a variety of ways. There are certainly other clinics that we know that they are targeting for closure.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that in addition to the Toledo Clinic, which is already in court, that the next clinics that will be targeted by Governor Kasich and the Department of Health will be in Dayton and Cincinnati. We know this because the law was written with them in mind. They realized that those clinics depended on public hospitals for their transfer agreements or on variances. That's why they eliminated those as options. So we know that there are going to be future legal battles. Each of them will have their own unique facets. And there's also a case that's been brought by the ACLU of Ohio, which challenges the way that law was made law because it was tucked into the budget instead of voted on as a standalone measure. And I think that tells you a lot about what the intent of this law was. They didn't have the normal vetting process where, you know, there were hearings only on this policy. They tucked it into the budget. And I think that tells you a lot about what their intent is. Their intent is to try to do things undercover in an obscure way when people won't notice. But the fact of the matter is we do notice because we care about women's health. One of the things I think I really want to impart to your listeners is that the pro-choice movement fought to legalize abortion so that it would be safe, so that clinics would be regulated, so they would be inspected, so that medical providers would be doing these procedures, and that it would be not done in back alleys and on the black market anymore. And unfortunately, what we're seeing in places like Texas, who have closed a lot more clinics than we have, women are turning again to the black market. They're going to flea markets, and they're buying God knows what, and they're being told that they're abortion medications, and they're taking them. That will happen in Ohio if we don't stop Governor Kasich from closing down safe medical providers of abortion care, because women won't have anywhere else to turn.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Kelly Copeland, executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio, and also Chrissy Thompson. She's a state capitol reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Coming up, we'll hear from Ohio Right to Life in the next segment of the program. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Brian in Grandview, you're on the air. Hi, Brian.
Hello. Love your program.
Thanks.
I agree that women should have a right to a lot of things just besides this, but it just seems kind of hypocritical that if somebody is pro-life, that they would allow the mother to be, her health to be in jeopardy, whether she got an abortion or not. It's still about just care, you know. So if the woman needs the care, she shouldn't be denied the care. And I just think that the whole thing is kind of hypocritical, and I like to hear the comments, and I'll listen off air.
Okay, Brian, thanks. Chrissy Thompson, just to clarify, if hypothetically, if something went wrong at a clinic, you can take the patient to any hospital.
That's right. They could call an ambulance, just like if something went wrong anywhere.
Right.
If you have a health problem and you need an ambulance, someone comes to take care of
you. This is a lack of an agreement.
That's right. And sometimes I have seen records of patient transfers happening according to agreement. So sometimes, the clinic's doctor will call a hospital that he has an agreement with and say, we have a patient, you know, per our agreement, we're going to, you know, admit this patient with such and such doctor at your hospital, send an ambulance over, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's not necessary for that patient to receive care.
So, Kelly Copeland, on that basis, how are they justifying the requirement for this agreement?
Well, they don't. Anytime reporters have tried to ask Governor Kasich about this, he flat out refuses to answer the question. They refused to have hearings on this issue. Now they're refusing to answer questions about it. Even now that we're in the court system, you know, spokespeople will say things like, well, you know, we're involved in litigation and we can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing that we know. We know that abortion clinics are being treated differently from other ambulatory surgical centers. The Inquirer reported that Kasich crafted new rules for how abortion clinics' licenses are to be renewed. And just last week, the Dayton newspaper reported that the ambulatory surgical facilities that aren't abortion clinics are having their annual inspections and license renewals done in a timely manner, but the abortion clinics are not. So they're being inspected, they're paying their fees, and then they're never hearing back from the Ohio Department of Health.
About whether or not they've been approved.
Right. And there have been employees who have been forced to retire, put on a list to not be rehired, employees who have been disciplined, all over Governor Kasich's crusade to close these clinics at any cost. And what he fails to do is to reduce the need for abortion. He has fought access to contraception. He has fought comprehensive sex education. He has not promoted paid maternity leave. He has cut food stamps. There's a lot of things that we could do that are in the interest of public policy that would reduce unintended pregnancy and the need for abortion. Governor Kasich has pursued none of that. Instead, what he's decided to do is effectively outlaw abortion by abusing his regulatory authority and taking that ability for women to seek out safe legal providers of abortion care, to take that away from them, even though it's a constitutionally protected right. And I think that's wrong. It's bad public policy, and it's bad for public health.
John in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. This is for either Kelly or Chrissy. I just wanted to see if you could comment on reports of either pressure or coercion on the Director of Health not to grant variances to the Sharonville Clinic.
Right. I do have a story by Daryl Rowland that speaks to that. Kelly Copeland?
Well, we know that there has been a longstanding campaign against the variances for some of the clinics and to also to do these bans on transfer agreements from public hospitals. And we know that this is coming from anti-choice groups, a lot of it coordinated by Ohio Right to Life, who you'll have on later. And we know that they're coordinating closely because when there is a closure order, Ohio Right to Life puts out a press release. They've already got the closure order uploaded onto their website before the clinic's even seen the paperwork. They're getting this stuff immediately from the Department of Health. That indicates to me that they're working hand in glove. And I think that, you know, you always want public entities to work with the citizenry. But I think that this has really gone too far.
Chrissy Thompson, do we know? I mean, has there been more than the lawsuit says the health director was pressured by the governor's office to close the clinic, but that's just a supposition at this point?
Right, and that lawsuit was dropped
right.
as a result
that's
of
the Sharonville one.
That's right.
Right.
That was kind of a countersuit that was involved in their process. I did an investigation in February, and to sum up what's six pages of papers here in front of me, essentially it does go back to the fact that these clinics were getting variance requests reviewed and granted before the Kasich administration took over the Department
before
of Health.
Before the 2013 rule, right?
Well, actually, there was quite a bit of controversy in 2011 and 2012, before that law was passed, about within the health department about basically, I'm going to, again, talk off the top of my head and sum things up here, but and I can tweet out the link if you're
we'll post a link to our
read the whole thing. But basically, saying you're moving too fast on this. We want to look at this more closely. We don't just grant these for this specific clinic. I'm paraphrasing here, mm-hmm. but the Kasich administration says, of course, that clinic got special scrutiny because anyone applying for a variance should get that kind of scrutiny. But
the question is, does everyone that applies for a variance get that kind of scrutiny?
Right. And these are the clinics that have variances for this specific rule. So that is part of the question.
John in Cincinnati, thanks a lot for your call. We appreciate it. Kelly Copeland, can we go back a few years to the ruling on Roe v. Wade that gave the states more rights, and how much has changed in Ohio since? That was sometime, I want to say, in the early 90s, early to mid-90s, when that started happening?
Well, what we've seen since Roe versus Wade has been an erosion of women's access to abortion care. We have 24-hour waiting periods. We have biased counseling. We have mandatory ultrasounds. A lot of things that are being regulated by politicians that really should be decisions between doctors and their patients. They sound like good ideas on their face, but they're often designed to be barriers for women to access abortion care. If you're a poor person who has to travel a long distance, and we're going to see more of that if these clinics close, you have to have transportation to get there. In Ohio, you have to go twice. We know that 60% of the women who have abortions have children. That means child care. That means time off of work. And the more barriers that have been erected between women and access to abortion, the more difficult that has become. And our concern is really what happens to the women if we lose, and I think that this is the goal of the Kasich administration, if we lose the clinics in Toledo, Dayton, and Cincinnati, abortion will be effectively outlawed in half of our state. Cincinnati, as the Cincinnati Inquirer has reported, will be the largest metropolitan area without an abortion provider. And our question is, what will happen to those women who do not have the means to travel the hundreds of miles to access their constitutionally protected right to have a safe, legal abortion? And Governor Kasich has refused to answer that question. Now, sometimes we've heard that they could turn to crisis pregnancy centers, and some of those centers do provide diapers and formula, but even as many diapers as they've provided over the years, they say something like 900,000 a year. Well, a baby uses 3,720 diapers a year. That means they're taking care of the diapers for 242 babies. There were 140,000 babies born last year. The need is great for these families, and it can't just be, we're going to close clinics. We're going to cut off food stamps. We're not going to require maternity leave. And we're just going to leave you to your own devices. That's not good public policy.
The ACLU filed suit last October in Cuyahoga County Common Pleas Court claiming that three abortion restrictions were in the budget that violate the mm-hmm. state constitutional ban on legislation with more than one subject. So one was the issue about granting the variances. What were the other two? Do you know, Chrissy?
Well, there were Actually, I think four or five, so I'm not sure which ones they specifically
pulled out. The ACLU filed on three.
So I'll tell you which ones were in the budget. One was more of a last-minute provision that requires a doctor to use external medical means, likely just an abdominal ultrasound, to find the heartbeat. And the doctor would then have to notify the woman, or has to know, this is law now, has to notify the woman about the presence of the heartbeat and the likelihood of the fetus surviving to full term. There is a restriction that, and this may not be in the suit, this one is related to funds more, but sends taxpayer money to other health clinics instead of abortion providers such as Planned Parenthood, so kind of reprioritizes who gets a certain kind of money.
I see.
I'm trying to see if I have others written down here.
I'm going to take a quick call from Susan in Columbus. Hi, Susan, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I'd like, I think your guest Kelly misspoke a little bit because she said that with the squeezing out of the abortion clinics, people will not have access to safe abortions. And I think what she's forgetting is that back in the 50s, before our Roe v. Wade, certain women were getting abortions. And this is a matter of class warfare here because the representatives who are wealthy, when their daughter is raped by somebody who has AIDS, will be able to take their daughter to the hospital and get an ectopic pregnancy resolution. And it's just going to be coded as something else. So, again, the wealthy people are going to be taking care of their own, just like before Roe v. Wade.
Okay. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
Kelly Copeland?
Well, we know that women of means will be able to travel and access the care that they need. As I said earlier, our concern is for those who get trapped by this, who are unable to travel, who are unable to go to a safe medical provider. I mean, that has been the basis of the pro-choice movement from the beginning, was that abortion should be safe and legal and accessible when people need it. And because they have failed to outlaw abortion outright, they're planning to effectively outlaw abortion by closing clinics without medical justification, and it's wrong.
Kelly Copeland, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Kelly Copeland, she's executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Ohio. Coming up from the Ohio Right to Life, the public relations manager, Katie McCann. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking this hour about the implications of the latest restrictions on access to legal abortion in Ohio. Last week, a Cincinnati area clinic stopped providing surgical abortions after a judge ruled that he would not grant a Sharonville clinic an exception to a state law that requires clinics have patient transfer agreements with local private hospitals, in other words, non-public hospitals. That leaves one abortion provider in the Cincinnati area. Still with us is Cincinnati Inquirer State Capitol reporter Chrissy Thompson. Chrissy, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
And joining us now in the studio is the public relations manager for Ohio Right to Life, Katie McCann. Welcome to the show, Katie.
Thank you very much.
Katie, do you worry about these restrictions will force women to turn to harmful, unregulated methods of obtaining abortions? That's the immediate response that you often hear, I'm sure.
Right. We keep hearing about this void of care in Cincinnati that's all of a sudden going to be there, but I think what's really important to talk about is all of the alternatives to abortion that are available. There are nearly 20 free clinics, community health centers, local health departments that are in the area. Women don't have to travel super far to find an OBGYN for little to no cost.
Someone, one of our last callers, Susan, brought up the issue of, well, women of means will still be able to get them. It's people without means that will be the ones that don't have the option to get an abortion.
Right. And that's
so it's a class issue.
Right. So what we're really talking about is free to low cost healthcare that is in Cincinnati that is going to help women carry their children to term. help promote healthy pregnancies for women. And like I said, there are probably 20 at least providers in the Cincinnati area that aren't doing abortions but are promoting healthy pregnancies that have OBGYNs on staff. So while there might not be an abortionist right there in Sharonville, these alternatives are still out there. And we would say, of course, that they're the preference, that they are the good that's available to women.
The issue is raised a couple different times that if something goes wrong at a clinic for any reason, whether it's an abortion or anything, you don't really have to have an agreement. You can send your patient to the nearest hospital just like you would for any ambulatory emergency, right?
Right. But transfer agreements are about ensuring continuity of care. So it's about having abortion facilities held to the same standards that the traditional medical community is held to. It's asking that they do a little more than just something that would, you know, you can call 911 from your house, mm-hmm. too.
Right, exactly.
But medical centers require a higher standard. If the abortion industry wants to be a part of that medical community, then we're just asking that they play by the same rules.
Is it the same rules, though? Isn't there a question about whether or not they're being, you know, they're not allowed to have or transfer agreements with public hospitals, for example. So that's
right.
Limited their
right.
options.
Right, but that's, so that's about where public opinion falls on the funding of taxpayer or taxpayer-funded abortions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been upheld. And we see that public opinion is very, very much on the side of opposing.
If somebody has something
abortions.
Go wrong in an abortion,
mm-hmm.
okay, and then they, well, it may not even be an abortion. Just say somebody has something go wrong with some other kind of procedure that they're having done at one of these clinics. Does that mean that the hospital, public or any hospital that takes them in on an emergency basis is providing an abortion too?
Well, again, that's about providing backup care, appropriate backup care. But having the transfer agreement in place ensures that the abortion facility can stay open. And so what we see is that having a taxpayer-funded hospital essentially prop open that abortion facility is making taxpayers keep that abortion facility open themselves. So that's really what it comes down to.
Are there any more steps per se? For instance, if a private institution accepts Medicaid, is there any farther that anything else that can be restricted at this point?
Can you repeat that question?
Well, I'm trying to think about how much you could, you know, that what's the next step after this? Because it's been a series of steps since they ruled on
right.
Roe v. Wade again back in the 90s and gave the states the rights to regulate
right.
abortion.
And I think that that's been done in Michigan, where that restriction on Medicaid funding for
that
abortion.
If you accept Medicaid?
I believe so.
Okay.
But again, abortion is not unrestricted. It's not unregulated. The Supreme
right.
Court has never ruled that it should just go completely unregulated. And I think that's what we're really talking about.
That seems to be what it was like before Roe v. Wade. It was unregulated back when it was illegal.
Right? So, but the point is, if they want safe, legal abortions, then again, you're going to have to be looking at regulations.
Right. Is Chrissy Thompson, has the issue of whether or not the clinics Are the rules the same, basically?
Well,
does everyone need a transfer agreement, right?
Everyone needs one. You know,
but
abortion
they're not
clinics
all restricted
are,
to private
that's
institutions.
That's right. And people who oppose abortion would say that that's because taxpayer money can't be used to provide abortions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think where I look at it is when I, because I just, you know, have to read documents and see what we can get out of that. The clinics that have had variances in the past, the Sharonville Clinic is one of them
mm-hmm.
that had a variance because it didn't have a transfer agreement in the past. when they had an emergency situation, or you know, again, we're using that term loosely, but there was they have to have backup doctors lined up in place so that they can provide, Katie said, the continuity of care. So
mm-hmm.
they have a doctor maybe they don't have an agreement with that hospital, but they have an agreement with that doctor to admit patients at that hospital. And they, you know, call the hospital, they call the doctor, and that's how it works. And I've read accounts of that happening. It seemed to happen relatively seamlessly. But again, these are, when it comes to the point of wanting a variance, it is a matter of judgment, right? The Department of Health has to make a decision whether they think that that is something that they should allow or not. So
I didn't ask Kelly Copeland. I guess I should have, but I'll just, you know, see if you could just weigh in on this a bit. Christy Thompson mentioned earlier about non-surgical abortion options. Is that an issue going forward that would be arrested by these kinds of variance restrictions?
Not right now. Okay. As far as I know, and, you know, we all know that Haskell's facility is still open and probably going
facility?
To do the Sharonville facility. And there's the Kettering one where there are surgical abortions happening. But, yeah, the expectation is that there will still be the chemical abortions, the RU486 happening.
Right. And they've said no.
Okay.
At this point, that they don't anticipate.
They don't like Ohio the way Ohio
That was the answer
regulates
for now, that. They don't anticipate that they will because they're not a fan of the methods that our law prescribes for providing that. So I don't know if things can change, but that's where they stand right now.
Do you have a sense, Katie McCann, of how many abortions will be averted with this policy?
Well, so in Ohio, there were 25,473 abortions in 2012, and we know that the vast majority of those were surgical. Haskell's facility closing, he says that he's seen tens of thousands of women over the years.
When you say Haskell, is that the director?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The Sharonville facility.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, Martin Haskell is the director of the Sharonville facility. And so he, in his editorial to the Cincinnati Enquirer, said that he's seen tens of thousands of women over the years. I think 6,000 women in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what we're looking at, just several thousand of abortions potentially being stopped at that one facility.
At that facility being stopped, but you don't know if they'll go out of state.
Well, yeah. So that's one thing that we have to think about, too, is that the Ohio Abortion Report does count the number of abortions on Ohio residents that take place in Ohio. Mm-hmm. Of course, it would be counting the ones that are happening in Dayton, in the Dayton area, and then still in the Cincinnati area, the Planned Parenthood there. So we can kind of get a sense of what's happening. But like I said, we do know that nearly 90% of abortions in Ohio are surgical.
Okay.
So it is a significant victory, I would say.
It would impact a lot of the women who seek abortions in the state of Ohio.
Right. But so what we're really looking at, though, is ensuring that women know the other options that are available to them in the area, because we don't want to just be the no, no, no crowd. We also want to promote the alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
We want to promote the free to low-cost OBGYN services that are in the area. There's not a void of care, like I said. There are plenty of people who are there and willing to help women. Pregnancy help centers in Cincinnati, Right to Life of Greater Cincinnati has done a great job of really helping direct that alternative movement down
there. Have you studied at all what the tipping point would be for how hard will it have to be to get an abortion before somehow it becomes profitable for somebody to start offering them illegally to lower income to people that want an abortion that can't afford to get them anymore? What that tipping point would be? Do you have any sense about that?
What the tipping point would be to start offering them, like, on the black market or something?
Yeah.
No, but what, I mean, really, it's
like
very
like, if
profitable.
Drugs were legal, then you'd go out and buy drugs legally, but people take risks to go buy them illegally because that's the only way they, you know, that's how they can afford them.
Right. So, again, if we're looking at whether Martin Haskell is providing abortions in Sharonville or not, he was charging upwards of $2,000. It is going to be a huge cost, regardless of whether abortion's legal or not, for women to find an abortion provider, which is, again, why we're promoting free to low-cost healthcare alternatives in the Southwest Ohio area.
Any sense about that, Chrissy Thompson? I'm just curious about what, if anyone has ever talked about what the tipping point would be,
I don't
where
know.
It would be profitable.
I haven't heard the tipping point per se for a surgical abortion, but I have heard some discussion about doing an illegal medication
Black
abortion.
Black market, okay.
Right, so getting that. A medication that, regardless of whether or not it was intended to be used for abortion,
okay.
You know, someone might hear that such and such, if you take a certain amount, could end your pregnancy. So I've heard some discussion about that. I haven't seen a study.
Okay.
I don't know if there are studies.
Yeah.
But
it
that's
all feels
been...
very speculative.
Well, yeah, it would be. It's just kind of curious whether anyone's ever asked that question. Mark in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Good morning. First of all, we need to look back to the history of the anti-abortion movement. It was not until 7 years after the decision of Roe v. Wade that it became an issue when Lee Atwater used it as a wedge issue to bring social and religious conservatism into the GOP tent. Secondly, those 25,000 plus abortions that the representative from Right to Life cites, how many of those would have been prevented with access to affordable contraception, emergency contraception, fact-based sex education, all things which the social and religious conservative movement and their political allies in this state oppose.
Does Ohio Right to Life necessarily oppose contraception?
No. No, and actually we...
And I'm not talking about...
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Talking about pills.
Right, so...
Okay.
Yeah, anything that is going to destroy a fertilized egg, of course we oppose because there's a unique human being present there. But we often talk about how we think it would be a little overreaching to say that contraception doesn't play a role in decreasing the number of abortions. But we also say that, well, you know, abstinence definitely does as well. And that's the only 100% guaranteed way to
True.
Prevent a so-called undesired pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. The Sharonville operation, Chrissy Thompson, that'll still be operating and they'll still be giving or providing
birth control.
Birth control.
That's right.
Checkups, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, birth control and, again, the pre-abortion appointment. Where
and there's no restriction for that at
well,
so far?
Well, if they're just operating.
Affiliated?
If they're just operating, if that facility is just operating as essentially a doctor's mm-hmm. office, for lack of a better word, but
because you can get the pre-counseling at a doctor's office before you go to an abortion clinic,
right? As long as it's with the correct doctor.
Gotcha.
There's some rules about that. The issue that has made these clinics, you know, made them so that they need to be licensed and regulated is because they're performing surgeries
mm-hmm.
at the clinic. So as long as the surgeries aren't performed there, then they don't have to fall under this rule.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one element that I've been thinking about and that we've reported quite a bit on that we haven't talked about today is just the concept of if abortion, you know, if the courts say that this has to be legal, at what point, and I don't know if we don't have a concrete answer, but at what point, if the three Cincinnati clinics were to close,
mm-hmm.
or the two in Cincinnati and one in Dayton were to close, you know, if Cincinnati does become the largest metropolitan area in the country without an abortion clinic,
mm-hmm.
At what point have we made it so that, you know, does there have to be access for women in order for it to be legal,
right?
So have we made it illegal to impossible for women to exercise this or make this decision, mm-hmm. which the courts have said they have to be able to make.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something, I mean, when you ask the governor about it and he says, well, I think the health department followed the law, which, again, they are allowed to do what they did, right? So that's true. But I don't know. It'll just be interesting to see as we continue to go forward where that conversation goes, because I you know, if we look at a place like Cincinnati without access to a clinic and there's nothing around it, is it fair
what
to have people
then?
Go up to Columbus or Indianapolis, you know?
All right, Chrissy Thompson, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Chrissy Thompson, State Capitol reporter for the Cincinnati Enquirer. We will post a link to her articles on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And Katie McCann, thanks for joining us from the Ohio Right to Life.
Thank you very much for having me.
Katie McCann is Public Relations Manager for Ohio Right to Life. Thanks a lot for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.